Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Actually,
here's John Williams.
I hired it out. Got some really smart people on the show today, and then I'll be in as well. We're here until 3 o'clock. It is the John Williams Show. All the way until 3 o'clock. Remember, it's Friday, and that means we'll do the Bright Side of Life, where you'll call in. Tell us some good news. Why are you smiling? Give me some of your bright sides after 2:30, between 2:30 and 3 o'clock on Fridays. We start the weekend with a group hug that works on the radio every single time. You could say, John, I just discovered a new tea, or I'm really happy about the Jimmy Butler trade, or we beat cancer, or my daughter's back from Afghanistan. Whatever it is that's making you smile, I want to hear about it between 2:30 and 3. You'll get the drill. I'm a little kind of shaky here. Ryan, you said that you had a Jimmy Butler quote that he posted something.
He just posted to Instagram right now a big, long thank you. We don't have to get into the whole thing, but he leads off by saying, "What can I say? I truly struggle with the words because you've been so much more than just my home for the last 6 years. You've been my life." This is to Chicago, by the way.
Keep reading.
"You've embraced me like a son and pushed me to get better every day, every season. I can honestly say that I've always been incredibly motivated to succeed. It's just the way I'm built, blah, blah, blah."
No. Keep reading. This is lovely.
All right.
But?
Is blah, blah, blah really in there?
I'm going through this now, but I know I owe so much to the person I am now and to the player that I've become to you, talking to Chicago. You always push me to never give anything less than my absolute best night in, night out. That's what you expected. That's what you deserved. And I hope you know that's what I dedicated my life to every time I walked into the facility or stepped onto the floor of the United Center. Thank you to the entire Bulls organization and the Reinsdorf family for giving me a chance in 2011 and for giving me the opportunity.
This is longer than I thought it was going to be. I'll be honest with you.
I'll go to the end here. And probably most important, thank you to everyone behind the organization that do not get the shine they deserve. Y'all are the real all-stars. Jimmy G. Buckets at Stacey King 21. So giving a hat tip there to Stacey King.
Why did he give a hat tip to Stacey King?
Stacy was the one who calls him Jimmy Buckets. That's how he got the nickname.
I got it. And what was the Sam Panionovich, our weekend sports anchor, is here. Is the word, was Jimmy Butler always 100% on the floor? Did he take any nights off?
No. He was the balls-of-the-wall player. He was a guy who was drafted in 2011, 30th pick, worked his way up. And it's funny, Tom Thibodeau was on the Dan Patrick Show this morning, and he gave a quote about Jimmy. And the quote was, "If they don't bite as puppies, they usually don't bite." And Jimmy was biting from the start. He got better every single offseason. He added something to his game. Problem is, the Bulls couldn't allocate anybody around him that could play. And with a player like that, who will probably make about $230 million in a couple of years, the window was closing to build a winner. And they dealt him. They got younger. And here we are.
So that's why I asked you to come in. Sam, so what's your take on this? I have read good and bad. I read at SB Nation today when they ranked how everybody did on the draft. They gave the Chicago Bulls a big fat F. I read a couple articles in the Tribune today, and at least one of them said that this might have been an everybody gets better. How do you feel about it?
There's two conversations. Do you like the return? Do you like the direction, right? Because it's two different conversations. You may not like the return. You may think they should have gotten more. Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and the seventh pick. I like the direction, though. That's where I'm going to take it, because this has been a middling basketball team. You can either win it or you're bad enough to get a top three, top five pick, right? I mean, those are the two places you'd like to be. The Bulls have been in the middle since Derrick Rose got hurt.
And, couple games over 500.
Okay, you go to the playoffs. Jerry Reinsdorf gets a luxury check for the playoff games and, you know, getting two or three games at the United Center. But did they have a chance to win a championship? With Jimmy Butler, the answer is no. So I like the direction that they finally have a path. The overused quote is they picked a lane, but they really did. They got younger, they got more athletic, and they have a bunch of cap space. This is a full-on youth movement. They're going to get younger, they're going to be bad for several years, but the plan is to outlast LeBron and outlast the Warriors, because those two teams are going to run the league.
Well, that's it. I mean, I almost think, I saw somebody say, well, it's kind of impossible to vie for the championship right now. The Warriors have made that untenable for 95% of the franchises in the NBA right now. Cleveland can make a run. I don't know who somebody else can make a run. The Bulls can't make a run.
No.
They can't make a run in Jimmy Butler's career. Not the next 4 or 5 years. I can't see that happening. So let's just get better or get a direction, right? Let's say, okay, here's how we're going to make our team a contender.
This is a white flag in the LeBron James era because they haven't been able to get through LeBron ever. And if you look at it, it's interesting because Chicago Bulls basketball from 84 to 98, when you have Michael Jordan, is really good. Before and after, there's not much there.
Have you seen Zach LaVine play?
He's electric.
Now, oh,
my gosh. He did just tear his ACL. I know you saw him in person a bunch. He won a dunk contest. He could fly, man.
He is. And, you know, he's been in the league 3 years. He doesn't have two full seasons under his belt. And you're right. He got hurt last year, and it was really tough because every year he got better. First year, I didn't like him. The radio station I worked with in Minneapolis had their games. So I saw or heard or attended pretty much every single one of his games in his career, in his NBA career. And the first season, I didn't like LaVine. I mean, he was a jumper, but very one-dimensional. The second year, I thought, oh, he can play. And then the third year, I thought, he can star.
He added the jumper.
Oh, my gosh, that's it.
And
that's
those are
exactly
the guys.
It.
You have to add something. When you come into the league, everybody's got talent. Everybody can play. Everybody can go out there and score 10 points in the NBA. How do you get better when the league adjusts to you? And Zach LaVine has certainly added something every year.
There are times where he'll be approaching the lane. He's kind of a slasher at times, but there will be times where you will see him put some sort of crazy dunk on somebody that you didn't even think was available. It wasn't like a wide open lane and he's just going to show off. There are times he just jumps over people.
The wild plays.
Yes, absolutely.
The wild plays. Multiple wild plays a game.
Yeah.
And, like Derrick Rose used to have.
Absolutely. And you cannot take your eyes off the floor when he's on it because you do not know when these moments are going to come. Zach LaVine is one of the most fun players I've seen play in the NBA. They tried to make him a point guard. He's a terrible point guard. If he becomes our point guard, then this will be a bad deal. So we get Chris Dunn, who was a big disappointment last year.
But he was a rookie. And under Tom Thibodeau, no rookies ever shine. Even Jimmy Butler didn't see the floor as a rookie. So you hope that that pedigree, the drive, the want to succeed in year two is there. You know, everybody asks me what I think about the trade. I can't tell you what I think about the trade. I need to see these players come into the system and play. You can't analyze the return until we're 3-4 years down the road. You just don't know.
Yeah, but talk about player number three.
Lauri Markkanen. He's a Finnish. He's 7 foot. He's the new European mold. He doesn't like to be at the basket. He likes to be at the three-point line.
He's a 7-footer that hits threes. I only saw him play a couple games last year. I think he's dynamite. He was so much better than everybody else in the NCAA last year.
He also set a modern-day record for threes made by a 7-footer. He made 69 threes last year at Arizona. It's strange, though. And the basketball you grew up watching and the basketball that I loved was when a 7-footer would back down, get the ball, turn,
right,
and dunk it in the rim. Now the 7-footers, they set a screen, and they pop out, and they shoot a 25-footer, but he can make them.
If you like Kevin Love's game, you'll love this guy's game.
Yes.
I mean, he can rebound, he can score inside, but he can run the floor, and he can hit long shots.
This is the shift from Jimmy Butler, who's more of a stopper. He likes to catch it. He's more isolation. These three guys are push the pace. They're going to run. They're going to jump. They're going to shoot. And this is the style that they've always wanted to implement under Fred Hoiberg because of personnel. Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade, slower, older, not as quick. These are lightning rods.
He was the 6th pick? Is that what he was?
Seventh.
7th pick. I'm thrilled about this. I don't know. Are you excited about
it? I like it. Like I said, I love the direction. Now, the team might win 25, 30 games next year, but the hope is when we turn the calendar to 2020, 2021, LeBron will be 35. I imagine the Warriors will not be able to afford everybody.
Next year, we're going to get a great draft pick, too. I mean,
they might be number one next year.
We're going to be good position to pick up another really good player next year.
That's what this is.
And I think we picked up two really good players last night.
John Paxson said, this is a rebuild. We know what this is. We're aware of what will follow. We expect to pick high in the next couple drafts. So that's all you need to know.
Okay, so then Vic wants to put it completely differently, where we're arguing about who got the better deal. Hey, Vic, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good, guys. Hey, Sam, it's a positive outlook. But I got a question for you. Who do you think got fleeced worse, the Bears or the Bulls?
See, this is funny, Vic, because for years the language amongst the fans, we need a quarterback, we need a quarterback, we need a quarterback. And then the Bears draft up and trade, or they trade up and draft the quarterback, and then it's, well, they shouldn't have traded up. So which one is it? Because people wanted a quarterback, then they get the quarterback, and there's still an issue. So I don't think the Bears got fleeced at all.
You don't think the Bears deal was a head-scratcher?
I don't think they got fleeced. What if he's a Pro Bowl quarterback?
Yeah, but you know what? They could have got him without making all those other trades.
We don't know that, though. We don't know that. What if somebody would have swooped in and taken him second? I mean, Vic, it's hypothetical. I'm with you. I probably wouldn't have traded up, but they found their man, they liked their man, and they made a move.
Okay, how about this? Vic, thank you for the call. Who got the better end of the deal, the Timberwolves or the Bulls?
Immediately, it's Minnesota. You talk about league pass, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns, Ricky Rubio. That's a team you're going to want to watch the highlight reel of. I think this catapults them finally into the playoffs. But I promise you, Jimmy Butler will not sign a long-term deal in Minnesota. It just won't happen.
Really?
He's going to a big market.
Really?
That's the plan. He's Hollywood. He's famous. He knows he is. And he knows he's good enough to get a record deal. He could get $200 million.
And he won't
get
that in a small market.
He doesn't want to be in Minnesota. No way.
Really, to me, they're all – I mean, I understand L.A., Chicago, New York, whatever. But after that, does anybody want to be in Oklahoma City, for crying out loud? I mean, is a place to live?
These players are brands now. They're not just basketball players. They want to go where they can affect the most amount of eyes, where they can reel in the most amount of dollars. And like you said, it's Boston, New York, Los Angeles, and we can cross Chicago off.
So maybe the bigger trade news today is in NBA, it's NHL. So just tell me what you make of what the Blackhawks did. Our weekend sports anchor, I get to talk on Saturdays with our own Sam Panionovich. I really enjoy our Saturday show. Happy to be here Monday through Friday. But on Saturday, you and Doma Tipongo, Griffin Filipich, my producer, and you and I, we all kind of hang out and do all sorts of things. And I asked you to come in today, Sam, just to talk a little sports with me. First, on the heels of the Chicago Bulls news, the trade with Jimmy Butler going to the Timberwolves in Minneapolis.
Jimmy's trainer signed off.
Okay, so here is the tweet from
Travell Gaines, his trainer.
So this is Jimmy Butler's personal
trainer, not team affiliated.
And about the Chicago Bulls, that they are leaving, does he come with Jimmy?
I imagine he does.
Maybe after the Timberwolves read this, they won't want him. He said, 0-82, worst culture in the league. I've met drug dealers with better morals than their GM. Several typos in this, by the way. He is a liar, and everyone knows. Trump has actually better grammar and typographical skills than this guy does. Wow, I've met drug dealers with better morals than their GM. What's
now,
that all about?
That tweet has since been deleted. We
Maybe
should
at
add
Jimmy's
that.
Request.
So Jimmy probably Snapchatted him and told him, "Hey, take that down."
He was whiffing too much atomic bomb.
Gar Forman was asked about this last night. Jim Rose actually read the tweet verbatim. And Gar said, it is what it is.
What does that mean?
Take from that what you must.
I have no idea what
now,
that
means.
Now,
there is this rolling rumor that Gar Forman tells people one thing and then does other things. It's been rumored that he told Jimmy they will not trade him. And then
They traded him.
They have sort of pushed out Tom Thibodeau. They pushed out Derrick Rose,
Joakim
Noah.
Jimmy Butler had said he wanted to stay in Chicago.
The list of players that the Bulls front office has sort of pushed out and thrown under the bus, it's growing by the day.
So does this trade, however good or bad for the team, make the GM of the Bulls look bad?
I think it does a little bit, but it probably doesn't matter because the money's good and the team makes money and the team is leading the league in attendance now 8 years in a row. So everything is good on the bottom line.
Who is?
The Bulls.
The Bulls lead the league.
8 seasons in a row, they've led the league in attendance.
Steve, are you writing some of this down? The Chicago Bulls aren't that good.
Doesn't matter.
Led the league in
but
attendance.
But the bottom line is good.
We outdraw the Warriors and the Cavaliers and, I don't know, do you want me to go through the list? Are
Every
you serious
team.
About that
I
statistic?
Promise.
I'm not sure you're right about that, Sam.
You can look it up.
Do they not know you can see the Jordan statue for free? You don't have to buy a ticket?
Those days are gone. Okay, talk to me about the Chicago Blackhawks. What
I know happened? I don't have enough time, but Nicklas Hjalmarsson has been traded to Arizona. They get a 24-year-old and a 22-year-old back in return. That's a salary dump. They had to get rid of a big contract. And then, here's the headliner. Jonathan Toews was at his best when he was with Brandon Saad, 2013, 2014, 2015. Saad has been reacquired from Columbus. The Blackhawks ship Artemi Panarin to the Blue Jackets. So the mindset now is you put Saad back with Toews. And the rumor is now the Blackhawks are going after T.J. Oshie to play with Patrick Kane.
Oh, he was fun. I like Oshie's game, but Lord knows he made a name for himself in the Olympics.
Former teammate in college of Jonathan Toews.
Oh, no kidding.
In
really?
North Dakota.
Really?
But about the Blackhawks, you know when you swipe the credit card a million times?
Yeah.
Eventually you have to pay the bill. And when you pay seven players $50 million and you have only $24 million left for 15 players, you can't keep everybody. So this is why this happens.
Was this a good move by the Blackhawks relative to that?
You had to move somebody. Chalmerson has taken thousands of pucks off the face and knees and shins. He's been beaten up.
But, bruised. If you go through the line, right. you're not going to get rid of Taves. You're not going to get rid of Kane. You can kind of go work through that.
Keep Keith. Seabrook probably you can't trade because of the contract. You need Crawford in goal. Somebody had to go. Did you lost Patrick Sharp, and now you lose Chalmerson.
What if the Hossa thing had happened sooner? What happens to his money, and would that have changed this in any way?
They wouldn't have been able to maneuver as much because that salary will pretty much be on long-term injury reserve. So it's sort of like you don't get the full $5.23 million or whatever, but you get relief for Marian Hossa. Now, they're going to wish they had Marian Hossa, but
that ain't,
money just fell out of the sky.
Does the team get better as a result of this?
They got younger, they got quicker, they got cheaper. I don't know if they're better this year, but more players are cost-controlled. You'll have Brandon Saad through 2021, and these younger guys, you'll have them for years and years.
All right, I'll see you on Saturday. That'll be tomorrow. Are you working Saturday?
Yes. I'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, by the way, what's the big fun thing you guys are doing Saturday?
We are going to taste all three Cub player cereals, and we will rate and review.
The Rizzies, the Zorilla Crunch.
Zorilla Crunch and the whatever David Ross's cereal is
Rizzo's, and what's the David Ross
The boxes cereal? Are in your office.
Grandpa Rossi. Ding, ding, ding. Thank you, Elif. All right, we'll listen to you tomorrow morning, and I'll be talking to you, too.
You got it.
Sam Panionovich, 137, make it 138 now on WGN. There's a piece in the Wall Street Journal today. In fact, they had a few pieces about the iPhone, which is celebrating its 10-year anniversary. Can you imagine not having an iPhone or a smartphone? Maybe you're a Droid person, but do you even remember what life was like before you could look something up instantly, before you had maps, before you could walk and text? Do you remember what life was like before that? If you thought about it, you probably could, but I'll bet you don't recall it very well. It's hard to imagine not having access to all of the things, both good and bad, that your phone in your hand presents, now 10 years old. So they have been writing about it in the Wall Street Journal this week. And Jeffrey Fowler, who writes about technology, wrote a letter to the iPhone. And I won't read all of it, but it's Why I Love You, Why I Hate You. The first is the Why I Love You. Dear iPhone, you're no product at all. You're a life partner. You're the first thing I look at in the morning and the last thing I look at before I sleep. There's no turning you off. I'm never bored when we're together. I always have a book to read plus something to do that's more pressing than finishing my book. For instance, Crushing Candy. You're a handsome showboat that lets me lord it over most Android friends. You're the most important thing I need to attend to during awkward elevator rides with forgot her name from accounting. You're also way cooler to fidget with than a cigarette and probably not as dangerous. I was smitten from the moment I realized with you in hand I could always name the 20th president. And then I realized I could also no longer get lost, including in places where people speak Finnish together. We can always find a 4.5-star coffee or foot massage or cronut in a 3-block radius. You've made it feel safe for me to get in a stranger's car and even take candy from him. Because of you, there's no chance I'll inadvertently lose touch with family or friends. You make me want to express myself. Without you, my cherished memories would be locked in my head. It's hard to imagine climbing a mountain without sharing a 360-degree panorama of it with all my friends and all of their beloved iPhones. And if you think about it, the number of products that the iPhone, okay, that's part of his letter, but that have made, if not obsolete, challenged the phone, the camera, flashlights, compasses, calculators. You don't need any of those things anymore because you have an iPhone.
John, I'll meet you at Ravinia, and I'll put up a red balloon so you can see where we are.
You don't need a red balloon anymore.
Remember that? You'd go to Ravinia or someplace like that. You'd have to navigate by landmarks or something like now. It's like, I'll text you.
Yeah. Where are you? I'm here. Do they have a thing now? There must be an app where I can see you, you can see me, and we'll find each other in a crowd. Beep, 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 beep. Like well, you're a blue dot and I'm a blue dot.
Facebook Live or Messenger Live, yeah.
But then he also writes this. Dear iPhone, we need to talk. It's not you. It's me. 10 years ago, I was the kind of person who enjoyed rock concerts, sunsets, and rainbows. With you in my life, capturing them has become a competitive sport. Jeffrey, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. Well done, well said, sir.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Yeah, Jeff. With the 10th birthday, it was just like, what do I say about the iPhone? And I felt like I was a divided man, and I think we all are.
So this is the January is actually the birth month of the iPhone, isn't it?
But this week is the week when it actually came out and got into people's hands.
Oh, okay. So Steve Jobs debuts it, but before that was before we all had a chance to actually put it in our hands. This is the week that we all were able to buy one?
Indeed. And in fact, at that January debut at the on stage, the iPhone didn't really even work. It was just they were very, very lucky to pull off that demo. It was really this week that it actually existed.
Were there lines then for the purchase of the first one?
You know, there was a lot of skepticism about the first one, right? Like, I don't know, does anybody really need a phone like this? I think when they made the announcement to Journal, we put the story on page A2. It wasn't even front page news back then for us. But, of course, now we're doing a whole week of coverage about how it's changed Apple, the world's most valuable company, how it's changed all sorts of industries. And, of course, my focus here is how it's changed our life, which, as you were saying, couldn't even remember what life was like beforehand.
And are debating whether or not life is better or worse as a result. I mean, you know, we talked to a guy earlier this week who was talking about how you should not even sell a phone to anybody under the age of 13. It so de-socializes them, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of concern, and I made a joke there about how phones probably aren't as dangerous for our health as cigarettes.
I noticed you said that, yeah.
But there is a lot of concern now that, you know, how addictive are these devices? They're certainly very good at hooking our attention and stealing it all the time. And, of course, then hooking us into all kinds of things, including not just distractions, but work. I mean, this is a portal to, you know, your boss always having a way to reach you in the middle of the night.
We don't have Uber without the smartphone. We don't have whole industries without the iPhone, right?
That's true. We have a great piece today in the Journal about the camera business. You know, people used to buy standalone cameras, and then the iPhone and smartphones came along and had pretty much good enough cameras, and they've gotten even better over the years. And so you really have to be kind of a specialist person these days to buy a standalone camera. The other more important thing in our lives, though, is it's made us all photographers, right? We all are out there, you know, capturing our vacations, but also just, you know, our sandwiches and our lunch. One of the coolest things about the iPhone for me is it got my parents, who are in their 70s, to actually share more with me, right? Because they now take pictures of what they're doing and they text it to me. So I'm actually, even though we don't live in the same city, I feel closer to them because of the iPhone.
I don't remember if it was your article or one of the companion articles in the Wall Street Journal. Jeffrey Fowler's on the phone line, personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal. But they reminded me that I had a very expensive Garmin in my car, and that cost a lot of money when I got it. And it was awesome because I had a map then that would tell me where to go. And, of course, now that seems so rudimentary compared to what my phone can do and so overpriced. Are there Garmins anymore? Is that technology still out there?
It's still out there, and you know, some people want a dedicated device for getting around in their car that's not actually as distracting as the phone.
Yeah.
And that's the other industry that we're developing now. It's things to take away the distraction from our phone, things to make us look less at our phone. I mean, in a way, you can think of even the Apple Watch, which is sort of one of Apple's newest big products. It part of its purpose is to like get us to not have to constantly get out our phone all the time to check the time or our messages or all sorts of other things. So, of course, they made an even tinier phone that now sits on our wrist to try to get our attention.
I was thinking on my Saturday show, I could do it right now. Maybe I'll never do it. But this was my thought. I wonder what you would get if you asked people, what's the thing you love the most about your iPhone? Maybe Droid, but let's talk about the iPhones. And what's the thing you hate the most about it? It could be an app. It could be something social, like we don't talk to each other anymore. How would you answer that? Is there something very specific about an iPhone that you love? And what do you dislike about it, Jeffrey?
The thing I would put at the top of my list is the always having a camera with me. I think it is not just an artistic capability, and I love photography, always have had regular cameras, but it's also just a way to communicate. It's the new keyboard. It's you know, how my parents know that I'm doing fine and how I know that they're doing fine.
Yeah.
So that is that makes the top of my list.
You know, the first the epiphany for me of the camera. I'm not into photography that much or sharing photos that much, but I see your point, and I know many more people than me do. But the neatest thing I ever saw somebody do was a guy came to my house to fix the computer. And he had to get the 72 small digit number on the back. And I was having trouble reading it and seeing it and getting access to it. And he goes, "What are you doing?" He just reached his phone down, clicked, took a picture of it, said, "Save this. Now you'll always have that information mm-hmm. stored. And it's the easy, you don't have to write that thing down. You don't even have to crane your neck. Just take a picture of it." And I went, "Oh, that is brilliant."
Yeah, as a journalist, I use it for notes all the time. But just even as a regular person, when I have park my car, I take a snap of where I park so I can remember
too.
It. But also, it's geotagged, so you can actually go find it on a map if you needed to.
What do we like the least about our iPhones?
To me, it's that, and this is part of is a design problem both with the iPhone and Android devices, is that they've become these always-on portals to distraction. And, you know, we first started hearing about this as a problem with distracted drivers, people texting while driving. But it's actually gone beyond that now. You know, just people walking around in the street here in big cities. I live in San Francisco. You know, people walking into traffic. Injuries are up from that. And it has this kind of psychic effect on your brain. Like, our brains need time to just stare out a window and process and relax. And we have now whole industries based on what it's called, the distraction economy, trying to get our attention, fight for that attention so that we'll, you know, tap on them or see their ads. And I just don't think that's healthy for us.
I have a friend who has a meditation app. So she uses the very device that's causing her all of this angst. And there's an app on there to help her relax and soothe herself. I guess you've seen those too.
Yeah. Some people find that helpful. There's a certain irony of using the phone
there?
To do that.
Isn't there? Yeah, I hate to see how it's just making it difficult for us to relate face-to-face, person-to-person. You know, in a way, I mean, at first blush, I said, oh, this is terrible. Everybody's communicating with their phones, and it's antisocial, but it's still a form of social. It's different social. But I think we are losing a certain emotional quotient in between each other. I think our spelling's gone to hell. And we don't seem and we don't care. That bothers me too. But I'm not doing a good job of putting my finger on it. But the interpersonal social talents, I think, that we need and have as a superior species, we're losing those.
And that goes along with a sense of community as well. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg was in Chicago yesterday talking about how he wants Facebook to get more involved in helping to support communities of people. You know, that's something that's on the decline in our society. But the real question and the challenge is, can anything that's mediated through technology, through a phone screen, as Facebook is, really, you know, replicate or replace something that is like a church group or you know, your neighborhood watch or a family? And so far, software and these glass and steel devices have not proven that they're very good at that.
I just haven't read many opinion pieces or columns where every sentence I went, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, I've seen that. That's me. And that was your piece today. Dear iPhone, I Love You, I Hate You by Jeffrey Fowler, Wall Street Journal. Look it up. I think you'll have to pay for it. And if you don't already subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, you should. Jeffrey, nice to talk to you. Let's visit again, okay?
Thanks so much for having me.
Jeffrey Fowler from the Wall Street Journal. Answer that question for me. What's the thing about your phone that you like the most and that you like the least? I really like voice-to-text technology. Again, that exists in other places, but mostly you're using it on your phone. How many of us are dictating very carefully into our phones, glancing to make sure that it's correct, and then hitting send? In fact, I think we take for granted how awesome and different texting is, how you can carry on a conversation over a period of time with somebody. It's not hanging on the phone waiting for them to respond right away, you know, to a voice message, to an actual live voice. I love the way texting works. How about you? What do you like the most? What do you like the least about your iPhone and the technology? It's 151. This is WGN. Vicki, you're right. Stay there. Tell me what you love. Tell me what you hate. You can text what you love, what you hate about your iPhone. On this week, the 10-year anniversary of that ubiquitous device. I like the flashlight thing, too. I don't know what it's done to the flashlight business, but Brenda and I were in a dark place last night. And I needed a flashlight. I had one on my phone. It wasn't anything naughty when we were in a dark place, Steve, but we did need a flashlight.
Well, I didn't know if you were having, you know, a relationship hiccup or what it was when you said you were in a dark place.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
We just don't talk anymore.
We're in a dark place.
When we're there, there ain't nothing on my iPhone that can fix that. There ain't no flashlight on my phone for that. Imagine yourself sailing aboard the most luxurious ship ever built. Brenda and I and my iPhone are going to be on the brand new Regent Seven Seas Explorer next April 23rd. For 8 days and nights, we're going to cruise the beautiful Mediterranean from Barcelona to Rome. We'll be in Spain, France, and Italy, and you could be with us too. The ship we're going to be on only has room for 750 passengers. It's brand spanking new, though. It's luxurious. It's large enough. 9 different dining areas. Largest balconies at sea for the suites, and everybody's in a suite. Plus, when you travel with Kelly Cruises, but it's 750 passengers, it's cozy. It's all-inclusive, so you don't pay for beverages, you don't pay for food, you don't pay for shore excursions. They're included. And guess what? Tips are included, too. If you act now, you can enjoy special savings. By now, I mean before June 30th. Today's the 23rd. And if you act now, you get a $500 per suite shipboard credit. That's money in your pocket to spend. Call Kelly Cruises and Tours right now, 630-990-1111. The weekend's here. You got a minute? Do it right now, 630-990-1111. It's 154. What do you love about your smartphone? What do you hate about it? Hey, Vicki, this is John. What did you want to say?
Well, first of all, welcome back. It's good to hear you.
Likewise. Thank you.
And also, I love it when my husband and I go out, like we'll go to a bar and we'll be watching sports things or something, and there's that elusive statistic about somebody that you want to look up. And so having that immediate gratification to be able to look up somebody and what did they do or where are they from or where did they go to college, you know, that we really like to do. It always helps in that conversation. But I feel opposite of you when it comes to the voice texting, because it seems like sometimes you say a word, and no matter how carefully you say it, it comes out wrong and sometimes changes the whole meaning of what you wanted to say.
You've seen that before.
And then you got to go back and change it. Yeah,
I know.
And then you got to go back and change it. And then your thumbs get in the way, and they don't do it right either. And then there's that auto correction. And I think some of those little things are what are a little bit irritating.
Yeah, all of us have had that string of damn autocorrect, because 3 or 4 times it's getting the word wrong, or you're getting it wrong. And
right. That
can be a whole string. It's a perfect call. Thanks, Vicki.
But the other good thing is you can make some comment and the person doesn't have to see your face when you're making it.
Which is frustrating, too, because how many times have you read something and thought, so what does that mean? Was that sarcastic or was that sincere? When they say right, did they say right? Or were they like, right? You don't know. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, sometimes you completely misread it. John, I love that I can be a know-it-all because of Siri. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what to do about that. Say you're all at the dinner table afterwards having a cup of coffee, and somebody's snapping their fingers, and they go, what was the thing? And then said, there's always the guy or gal in the group that goes, well, I'll look it up. And you go, well, you really don't have to look up every time we talk ourselves into a corner. Maybe we'll just not know right now. But no, everybody's Googling it away. Siri, what is the thing about the thing? Maybe we don't have to know.
We stopped wondering. That's what I miss. You know, like something bothering you in your brain, trying to figure it out.
Yeah. That little exercise is probably good for you, but our brain doesn't do it anymore. You know, in the grand scheme of things, I'm convinced that computers have made us dumber. I mean, some really smart people made the computers, and then some other really smart people made the software and the programs. And then the rest of us got dumber using it.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
But I already did.
Here's John Williams.
I'll come up with another one here in a hot sec. It's 209. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Lord have mercy.
It's a lovely day out there. Nicer today than it was yesterday. Be in the studio tomorrow from 10 to noon. Come on by, wave, say hi, tune in. We're on the radio, you know. And we will do a bunch of interesting things on our show tomorrow. We'll close the show today with The Bright Side. In a half an hour, I'll ask you to call in. Tell me what the good news is in your world, why you're smiling, and we'll smile with you. Unless you're Hetty Weiss. Wonder what this is like for her these days. I don't mean to throw a pity party for her. I don't know her. I bumped into her a couple of times at some of the shows in town, but I just wonder how she's reacting to this, and maybe she deserves it, maybe she doesn't. But there's the theater critic, long time for the Chicago Sun-Times and an on-air contributor to Channel 11. You may have read Tracy Schwartz's and Rick Kogan's long story on the front page of the Chicago Tribune. And the point is that this thing isn't going away. She wrote a review for Passover, which is showing at Steppenwolf Theater. The first time I read the review, I thought, that's a pretty good review. I just read it again today, and I thought, okay, maybe I see their point, but only to a degree. First, let's just read the review that got all of this going. Datelined June 13th, 2017. Literally. Listen, I won't read every word of it, but here's a lot of it. You'll get the gist of it. And my question to you is, based on this review, would you say that the theater community in Chicago should now essentially boycott Hetty Weiss? She's blackballed. They don't like her. They've served notice, and they're no longer going to allow free passes for her to review the shows. Honestly, I don't know that that's a real big deal. It's just her, and I'm sure the Sun-Times and Channel 11 can afford to get her into the things, but I guess that's courtesy extended to the theater critics in town, and they do no longer want to extend that courtesy. Because she wrote, quote, "The essential premise of Antoinette Nuadu's play, Passover, now in a brilliantly acted world premiere at Steppenwolf Theater, is unquestionably inspired. Nuadu has grabbed hold of the basic outline of Waiting for Godot. She has reimagined the play by giving us two young contemporary African-American men who hang out on a cement strip where a flickering lamppost offers about as much promise as the skeletal tree in Godot, and where their hope of passing over to a better life and of escaping their dead-end existence repeatedly turns into a pipe dream. Unfortunately, Nuadu derails her work in the final 10 minutes of its 80-minute running time. You will understand why simply by tracking the endless headlines of senseless, endemic violence in Chicago over the past week to see why this play distorts the full story. To be sure, no one can argue with the fact that this city and many others throughout the country has a problem with the use of deadly police force against African Americans. But for all of the many and varied causes we know so well, much of the lion's share of the violence is perpetrated within the community itself. Nuadu's simplistic, wholly generic characterization of a racist white cop, clearly meant to indict all white cops, is wrong-headed and self-defeating. Just look at news reports about recent shootings on the lakefront, on the New Riverwalk, in Woodlawn, and you will see the look of relief when the police arrive on the scene. And the playwright's final scenes, including a speech by the clueless white aristocrat who appears earlier in the story and who would not be more and who could not be more condescending to Steppenwolf's largely white liberal audience, further robs the play of its potential impact. About the actors in the show, she says, Hill and Parker are such sublime actors, possessed of wonderful physical grace and finely honed tragicomic instincts, that watching them bicker, tease, wrestle, put on a masterpiece theater like British airs, and above all dream of making it to the promised land, is like a master class in dramatic interplay. Parker is particularly charismatic, and Nuadu has written terrific, alternately playful and heartbreaking dialogue for them. All the more reason to regret her choice of ending. She goes on to talk a little bit more about the storyline of her play. She says how she's admired Hallahan, one of the actors. As it does often, this is the last sentence in her review, as it often does, Steppenwolf tries to send a message with its play. Instead, it ends up clubbing its audience over the head in a way that also makes its applause feel self-congratulatory. So she wrote that. I don't know. Is that a good review or bad review? Are you intrigued? Does that make you now not want to buy tickets to the show, or do you want to buy tickets to the show?
Well, either way, that's not her job either.
I mean, I guess so. I'm just trying to gauge their outrage, though. Like, oh, my God, you've killed us. I don't think this, if for nothing else, Steve, financial reasons, kills the play.
Okay, right.
She says it's heavy-handed, but I guess you're right. She should be writing without any consideration of that, huh?
Well, yeah, her review isn't to put people in the seats. It's to give her educated opinion of it and to comment on it.
To look at this now. There's a petition at change.org created by a group of local artists calling itself Chicago Theater Accountability Coalition. 70 of the city's 200 theaters have agreed not to give her complimentary tickets. And they said, okay, well, who are the 70? And they said, well, we don't want to say. So there's this little quiet club of people that are saying she's on our blacklist.
And that was a cop-out because she said, well, the list is always changing.
Mm-hmm.
But,
okay, so there must be more to it than this. Evidently, she's rankled them in the past.
Right.
Them being Steppenwolf and the rest of the theater community.
The piece mentions a dust-up with Tony Kushner, who's one of America's greatest playwrights right now living. And so, I mean...
But the artistic director and executive director of Steppenwolf, when this first came out, described her as bigoted. I don't know Hetty this well, and I don't know that I need... You know, I don't know what the best way to review this is.
They accused her of, one group accused her of fat shaming because she complimented the artistic director for making heavier people look good in the clothes. Did you see that quote?
No, I did not.
Yeah, she's talking about another play, and they said, you know, and the womanly bodies or something fit nicely in such and such's costumes, and it was described as an episode of fat shaming.
I don't get it.
But you're right, though, because these are many, I don't know, many of these theaters, but I know others, and they're responsible people. You know what I mean? I mean, they don't just make things up either.
Who should have thick skin? Lord,
well, that's the point, isn't it?
I mean, Steppenwolf should. Okay, so I mean, as you said in our podcast last week, I mean, I thought we'd be done talking about this by now, but Steppenwolf is sufficiently legit that we should pay attention to them and not dismiss this out of hand.
Right, I think that's fair, yeah. But, I mean, I thought the whole point of theater art is to provoke, and in many ways criticism is another form of that. I can see the offenses in some of what she's written, but I don't think it's damning.
A friend of ours who's kind of close to the arts sent me an email this week, not knowing that this article was coming, just 2 days ago, and said, oh my God, can you believe this Weiss thing? And I said, what's the latest? He said, well, nothing, but I'm just really torn about this. And his problem wasn't critiquing a critic so much as her stepping into the white people discussing the black crime problem and how difficult that is for us to do. So when she says, no one can argue with the fact that this city and many others throughout the country has a problem with the use of deadly police force against African Americans, but for all the many and varied causes we know, the lion's share of the violence is perpetrated within the community itself. And he suggested that that's a statement that if even true, is almost impossible for white people to make.
Well, if I'm at the Steppenwolf, I'm thinking, wait a minute, what does this have to do with a review of my play?
Well, so what do you feel about that? When you're reading a review of a movie, a book, an album, sometimes they will go off on a tangent. They'll tell you a story. They'll make clearly this tangent is related to the context of the article, to the review itself. But she could have done one without the other, right? But she chose not to. She said it's wrongheaded for them to make it all look like it's racist white cops when the real problem of violence on blacks in this city is black on black violence in this city. And she wasn't going to let them get, she was not going to give them that pass. I mean, I'm asking you, Steve, do you think that point is important enough for her to make, or should she have let that go?
Well, there are a lot of book critics who are, you know, artists on their own, and they will take a book and then make their own argument about culture in one way or another.
Sure, you see that all the time.
Yeah, and so I think that's kind of what you're arguing might be done here, and that makes sense to me.
I haven't seen the play, and I'm not a Hetty Weiss expert, so maybe I'm missing something here.
Can I just say, because I've told a couple of people, I've been on fire about this whole thing.
Why?
Because I'm trying to sort it out myself, because I have respect on either side of this. And as someone might have said to me, well, who's Hetty Weiss? Hetty Weiss is really an institution in this city when it comes to theater. She's been covering theater, I think, for as long as I've been in broadcasting, over 30 years, and she has always been one of the top one or two or three theater critics in the city. I mean, she's a giant in theater criticism in Chicago history.
Absolutely. No argument here.
And now the industry is turning on her.
Yeah. And to what do you attribute that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know her or followed her closely enough to know all of it.
That's the thing. I've read her for years, and if she's been unfair or unkind to fat people or black people or theater people, that was lost on me.
And I think I said it earlier, but the point of art and theater is to poke people, to provoke people. So how can they turn on someone who, I mean, is being at... maybe at worst, provocative.
Okay, here's my question. 312-981-7200. Does the theater community have a point here? Does the Sun-Times, by the way, and Hedy Weiss, we've invited them both on the last 2 weeks in both groups, Hedy specifically, and I think Hedy originally was inclined to come on but then thought better of it, and the Sun-Times is not coming on either, so I can't go there.
You did have Chris Jones on last week.
I sure did.
And I had to get out of the car, so I missed it. What was his point?
Well, he and I spent a lot of time talking about the New York production of Caesar that depicts Donald Trump as Caesar. In each case, he said that you do need to be very careful about what you're saying and how you're saying it. That was more for the artists, So that when you do Donald Trump as Caesar, I know you have a right to, but you should pay attention to the time and the place, and stuff's going to happen when you do that. He was on Hedy's side on this one, although he was not as critical of the play as she was either. He thought it was a pretty good play. He did not agree with her criticism entirely, but he's troubled by how inflammatory everything is right now. And that's true, isn't it?
I mean, if anyone's going to stand up for divergent opinions, you think it would be theater.
The left is now as absolutely intolerant as the right.
That's what this seems to be. I mean, when you read that committee name, it sounded like a Soviet committee. I mean, I started laughing, but it's the Committee for Fairness and Truth in the or something like that.
It's the Chicago Theater for Accountability Coalition, Steve.
It sounds like it was created to go after one person.
It didn't sound Soviet to me. It sounded high school to me. That's the sort of committees we were always forming at Manuka. Well, then we'll just form the Better Lunch for Students in 2006 committee.
And pop for 25 cents.
These were the issues that we had control over. Okay, I'll stop talking. You start. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. 226. Cut copies in town this weekend. Man Beyond the Beach is Sunday. Cut copy in town. And there's a bunch of pretty good things for you to do this weekend. I'll give you some highlights after 2:30 before our bright side. All right, let's talk to Dan. You're on WGN. Dan, jump in there. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yes, hi. Two issues. I think the first issue is... I don't know who Hedy is. I just don't read the reviews about that. But she is right about what goes on within the black community. The only time chaos ends is when the police arrive. Now, there's also another point, whoever said before about black policemen. Whenever there's a shooting with a policeman in a black community, somebody has called the police because there's been a civil disobedience go on. And you start reading, I mean, if you start looking into what goes on, every one of these shootings, the police have been called because there's total chaos there, okay? That's a big issue.
No, I think, you know, listen, here's you're saying exactly what she said. She said it's wrong-headed. And she said that when you look at all the news reports about recent shootings on the lakefront, the Riverwalk, Woodlawn, you see the look of relief when the police arrive on the scene. Maybe the artist gets to tell a very specific, narrow part of the story. It doesn't have to be all-encompassing. But as we said earlier, Hedy Weiss wasn't having it. She's calling them out for that in a review that is otherwise glowing. Remember, she says to start this review, the essential premise of the play, now in a brilliantly acted world premiere at Steppenwolf, is unquestionably inspired. Dan, thanks for the phone call. Glad you joined us. We're going to Laura. You're on WGN. Hey, Laura, this is John. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I told your screener, I'm involved in the theater community here in Chicago, but I'm not directly involved with the coalition specifically. But a lot of people in my network are, and obviously there's been a lot of conversation recently about this. I think what is being misrepresented about the coalition's goals are what exactly was problematic with Hetty's consistent awful behavior. She's shown over many years to not really understand the nuance of some of the larger issues going on in our community or in this country. And the biggest problem for Passover, and I did see the show, so if that's helpful, that white people, I'm a white person, we often respond from a place of fragility when we are faced with these kinds of things. You can see that she praised the show in many, many places, but then as soon as it turned around and it was kind of thrown in white people's faces, in my opinion, it was in an honest and ironic way, in a way that was meant to show us exactly what the problem was. I don't think it was heavy-handed. But when that was thrown in her face, then she turned it around and she made it about a different issue. If you look at the piece as a whole, it is more about the systemic issues that people of color are facing in this city and in this country. And to turn it around and say, well, no, black-on-black crime, which is a lie or at least exaggerated as far as a problem, to turn it around on that is to disregard the larger issue. So this is something that Hetty does pretty frequently in her views, is she...
Yeah, but I got to tell you, okay, but hold on, Laura. I mean, you're making fine points, and you saw the show, we didn't, but I think if you look it up, you'll find that the vast majority of crime against blacks in this country is committed by other blacks. That's a fact.
If I can follow that, did you say that it was a lie or an exaggeration? Is that what you just said?
I do believe it's an exaggeration.
Okay, and I don't want to argue that. I only bring it up and point it out because, in a way, you're arguing the other side of the same thing she did. So if she's got her opinion and puts it out, why should she be punished for doing what you just did here, too? I mean, they're both they're both subjective statements.
Well, hold on. There's nothing subjective about the statistics. What? If you look at how many times African-Americans are shot or burgled or mugged in this country, the vast majority of those times, I'll look it up, but I don't think I'm going to eat these words, those crimes are committed by other people of color. It's not whites or white cops that are doing it.
But what happens when you reduce it down to the issue that is present now, as opposed to going back and looking at what caused these situations to pop up? And that's years and years and years of oppression.
Okay, fair enough. We can live with that. I'm sorry, Steve, you were about to say something.
Well, the only thing I'm just saying is you're proving that you just disagree with her opinion. You have a different one. I don't know why then, if you support the theater and the arts, why you think just because she has an unpopular opinion or doesn't get it, that the theater should be able to shut her down. Shouldn't that be up to the Sun-Times if they don't think she's representing them?
Well, first of all, no one's trying to shut Hetty down. I want to make that clear. That is definitely not the coalition's goal. Insofar as I've been able to glean from things I've seen online in my network.
Did you say you're in the coalition, Laura?
I am not, but many people in my network are, as I'm involved in the theater community here in Chicago.
Yeah. I'm late for time. I'm going to let you go, but give me your last thought. Was the show a good show? Was it a flawed show?
It was a brilliant show. I thought it was beautifully done. I thought it was very masterfully performed, obviously. The source material was delightful. But I also think, like, as a white person, I think.
You think? No, she's gone. All right, Laura. Well, hold on, Laura. You're cutting in and out. And you know what I want you to do, though? Just hold on. Maybe you could share some contact information with my producer, because when we've reached out to at least Steppenwolf, they didn't want to talk on the radio. Maybe somebody else will. But I appreciate you joining us. It's 2:32. The news is next. This is WGN. Our Bright Side segment's right around the corner. You can text right now your Bright Side, or get ready to call in a few minutes. We'll open up the phone lines. 312-981-7200 is the number. Tell me some good news in your world. While you're smiling, we'll smile with you. That's how the Bright Side works. Last couple of calls and texts about this Hetty Weiss thing. Harriet's been holding it. I said I'd put her on. Hey, Harriet, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi. What I wanted to say was I can get the uproar. I completely understand. What people get upset about is that when you talk about police crime on black pedestrians versus black-on-black crime. They're somehow, when she tried to compare the two, and the two are completely different. It's apples and oranges. The police, they're paid to serve and protect us, whereas the black-on-black crime are committed by criminals. These are people who should be in jail. We should get rid of them. However, with the police, I mean, I am the mother of a college-age African-American son who I don't feel comfortable with him getting stopped by the police.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that, I'm really glad you called, and I think that's a really interesting distinction because maybe the play's flaw, you know, Hetty says they don't even talk about that, isn't that big of an omission because that wasn't their point. They weren't even going down that road. They were just going to talk about this other problem in society, and that's cops shooting people like Philando Castile. Ironic that the Philando Castile video came out this week. Oh, my Lord, is that hard to watch. Oh, my Lord.
I made myself watch it. You know, being, the mother of an African-American son and the wife of an African-American man. You know, this is as big a fear for me as them going into a bad area and, you know, being robbed. It really hurt me. It tore my heart apart.
Yeah.
But when you hear it lumped together, what it's saying is you don't have the right to be upset about someone who is on the payroll to protect you, shooting and murdering, you know, people who don't deserve to be shot or murdered.
I'm really glad you called. I hadn't heard it put that way. Thanks for joining us, Harriet.
Thank you.
Have a good day. It's 2:44. All right, we'll pause here. The bright side's right around the corner. In fact, we'll clear the lines now, and you can call 312-981-7200, both on the heels of this conversation or the news all week. It's nice that Friday gets here, and as we get ready for the weekend, we just pause and we say, okay, so what's making you smile? What's some good news in your world? You can't think of some off the top of your head? Well, that's your assignment. Now tell me what it is next on WGN. Hey, here we go.
Some things in life are bad.
This is The Bright Side.
They can really make you mad.
I've got an open phone line.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
Call me right now at 312.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
981.
That grumble, give a whistle.
7200.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
Sing it home if you know the words.
Always look on the bright side
and
of life.
Whistle.
Always
on Fridays, we start your weekend with the bright side. You call in, tell us some good news in your world, and we all smile together. Steve Bertrand, your reading of the story about the McDonald's in Indiana. The one guy says, I'll pay for the people behind me. And then that guy says, I'll pay for the people behind me. And it spontaneously went to over 140 customers on Father's Day weekend. That's the nicest thing I've heard in a long time.
Isn't that great? I love it.
That's my bright side. What's your bright side, Steve Bertrand?
I am looking forward to the Pride Parade this weekend. My whole family's going to come in March, and they're still talking about your performance there a couple of years ago when you were marrying people.
When the Steve Cochran, Kathy, Judy, and I were the officiants of literally the very first gay same-sex weddings in Illinois history, is that right?
Yeah, that had just become legal.
They did, and these 10 proud couples. By the way, some of them heterosexual couples renewing their vows, but maybe their child was gay. But, I mean, just this interesting mix of people, men and men, women and women. It was all across the rainbow. We're getting married on our float as we went throughout the Pride Parade. I'll never forget that. That was memorable.
Always.
Okay, let's pick up some phone lines. We'll start with Rick. Hey, Rick, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Rick, you're on the air.
My bright side is I just started my vacation for the next 10 days, heading up to Spooner, Wisconsin, to a cabin on Bear Lake. Can't wait.
Oh, man. It sounds, boy, have great weather. Have a great week, sir.
Thank you.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Hey, Tom, this is John. What's your bright side? You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, John. Three quick bright sides. I got a son who's got a new job, which is great. Grandson waiting for the summer, doing waiting. He got a $50 tip. And close friends of ours sold their house 6 months.
Oh, man. That's so, all good.
Three nice things.
Boy, and when I hear that our kids become taxpayers, that just does my heart so much good. Thank you, sir.
Enjoy it. It's your last chance at it.
Okay, let's go to John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, John?
Hi, John. I finally got a job after 6 months of unemployment. It's been a real godsend.
Attaboy, boy. I can just hear the happiness in your voice, sir.
It's great. It's good to be back to work.
Always look on the light side of life.
Hey, Mary, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, King John.
Hey.
We are so excited. My son and daughter-in-law are adopting twins on Monday.
Oh, wow.
We're heading to Iowa so we can join with them in court to see them become official Wallakewitzes.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm going to cry. What good news. What a great day you're going to have on Monday.
Oh, we are so excited. We can hardly stand it.
How lucky are those kids? Mary, thanks for the call. Hey, Dale, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your good news, Dale?
Hey, John. Well, I'm on the flip side of Rick. I just finished 10 days of vacation. I'm feeling refreshed. And the great thing about it is I got to spend time with family, with friends, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful day.
You sound recharged, Dale.
Amen. Amen. I am not exactly ready to jump back into work, but I am refreshed and ready to go.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for the call. Hey, Sarah, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. I'm so excited because my sister just graduated a couple of weeks ago from University of Evansville in Indiana, and she moved down to Nashville. And yesterday she got her first nursing job. So congrats, Marissa.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. By the way, is this Sarah from down the hall?
Yes, it is, John, from down the hall.
Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. And shameless plug, I'm also happy and looking on the bright side because better get your tickets for Teddy Roosevelt with John Williams. They're selling fast.
No plugging on the bright side, Sarah. No plugging on the bright side.
Well, I'm happy that that people are excited about the show.
I am too. Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome.
WGNradio.com/events. All right, Cheryl, you're on WGN. What's your bright side, Cheryl? You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What's your good news?
Well, I'm going to Rush Hospital to pick up my husband, who's been in for a couple of days, to bring him to Northwestern Hospital to see our first grandchild be born. And I'm so excited.
I'm thrilled for you guys, Cheryl. My best to the whole family, okay?
Thank you.
How about Jan? You're on WGN. Jan, why are you? Oh, hold on. I'll get to you, Jan. It looks like Nina's up. Hey, Nina, this is John. You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hey.
We are so excited. We've been without a dog for over a year, and tomorrow we're going to pick up our 10-week-old Bernese Mountain Dog puppy.
Oh, nice. Hey, do you want two more?
So
I've got
excited.
A couple. I'd be happy to make you a big family if you like.
Nope. We did two, and we're going to stick with one for now.
You are wise. Nina, have a great weekend. What fun you guys will have.
You too, John. Thanks.
Shame on me for trying to unload Daisy, the dizzy dappled dachshund, and Bingo, the hunchback wiener dog. Hey, Jan, this is John. You're on the air. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. I just want to say that I absolutely love your giggle, and whenever I hear it, be it Monday through Friday, it just puts a big smile on my face.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I'm tempted to giggle now, but it'll come. It'll come. It'll come. So always look on the bright side, 312-981-7200. When we hang up, that's when the lines free up and you can still get in. Let's go to Tony on 6. What's your bright side, Tony? You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey, Tony.
My boss gave me a raise after 1 year of $7 an hour.
Oh, man. Well, I'll take what I can get, right, Tony?
That's right.
Happy raise to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Spend it wisely.
When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps.
You can text to 312-981-7200. This one says, John, blessed to be one day away from my 65th birthday, one I never thought I'd see after my cancer 3 years ago.
Always look on.
John, my bright side is that my power was out for 6 hours and my refrigerator stayed cold. The food was unspoiled.
Life is quite absurd.
How about that? All right, a couple more here. Let's go to Connie on line one. Hey, Connie, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your good news, Connie?
Hi, John. Hi, John. Our adult daughter that lives, and she lives in Portland, Oregon. She's halfway through her chemo treatments for lymphoma.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, every time I hear that somebody's going to beat cancer, I just can't help but say we live in amazing times, don't we?
We absolutely do. You bet.
Our best to everybody. Thanks, Connie. Hey, Robert, this is John. Why are you smiling today, Robert?
Oh, first of all, I'm so thankful for your show. I love WGN.
Attaboy.
There is no other radio station anyone needs to put on, period. From Nicholas to you. But no, I was able to buy my neighbor's car. It's a 92 Ferrari Testarossa with 3,500 miles, and I bought it for a steal. So
how much did you pay? How much did you pay?
$70,000.
I thought you were going to say. Did you hear about the video this week? A guy sold like a Ferrari. He took the picture of it. And, you know, he took a, but when you see it online, it just looks like a little teeny matchbox car because it's a picture on your phone or on your computer. But anyway, he took a picture of a Ferrari and he said, hey, I've got to get rid of this thing. It's for sale for like $100. That's why I asked. So then everybody shows up and he's making videos of people coming up. But the car, as depicted in the picture, is actual size. It was a little matchbox car.
Oh, no, 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 no. This is a real car. It's going to cost me $15,000 just to get it running. But the point is that car with 3,500 miles on it is worth about, I don't know, whoever wants to buy it, I'm not going to sell it. This is my dream car. It's probably worth $160,000. Life seems jolly rotten.
There's something. Robert, thanks for the call. That's the way we do it on Fridays. We tell you to tell us what it is that's making you smile. We'll do the bright side again next week. Same time, same channel. This is WGN.